Welcome to the weekly news roundup. We're going to do a deep dive discussion into combating the police state. I want to talk about this from a couple different perspectives here and just mention just a few of the articles that are going around and talk about a little bit about the nonsense on both political aisles that led to the crazy things that our world is so outraged about right this moment. And to start this, we are going to go over into the EU. Because over there in the EU, the Danish presidency, which is now right now, like they focus, they roll through different people who are in charge, and the country in charge right now is Danish, and they are really all about breaking encryption and spying on everything. Basically, they want a pure totalitarian state. Think 1984. Think V for Vendetta. You can just think about all of the more atrocious means of collecting data. Well, Element has come out. Of course, if you use Matrix, we do have a Matrix channel. You can search up Switch to Linux channel in the public channels list over there. We use Element to access that. At least I do, and several of the people there do. Of course, you can use whatever platform to access the Matrix system that you want. But Element is one of several companies that have come out against this open chat system that is going around. So effectively what this is the Danish presidency really wants to see 1984 come to play. He read George Orwell's book. He read 1984 and goes, wow, this is a society I would like to be Big Brother of. Of course, V for Vendetta, you have the chancellor, you know, who's fully in charge of everything. And starting out both of those, some of the audience may want to read, some of the audience may want to watch movies. Of course, there are 1984 rendition movies. I haven't seen the newer one. I've seen the older one. Of course, in that is a pure totalitarian state, everything. Now, the world, the way the world is different, though, is in 1984, of which V for Vendetta tends to take a lot of their plays from. It's not that everybody is perpetually spied on. It's that everybody at any given time could be spied on. Now, in the movie rendition, the old public domain movie rendition of the book, it does appear they are constantly spied on because every single time Winston does something in front of a camera, indeed, they know about it. So it begs the question how many people are out there. The problem we have in our current world is we have this infinite ability to collect data and the infinite ability to store data and the infinite ability to access data. And this lends itself, even if what you're doing is not a crime today, what you are doing could be a crime in a future iteration. And do we want them to proactively go back and research through those databases? And it's like, well, that could never happen, except it did. It did happen. IBM worked with Nazi Germany, actually it was before Nazi Germany. They worked with Germany before Hitler took power to create databases of just a number of different things, heritage and religion and status and things like this. It was that database that when Hitler took power, accessed that database to find all of the people, and that became the basis by which he searched for everybody. So maintaining a database and constantly watching and monitoring is part of the big problems here. And so having a look at this blog post here from Element, they want to express their deepest concerns regarding the current approach to the proposed regulation of CSA. I guess CSAM is now the old word. Now it's CSA. Go figure. Anyway, they say that this proposal they're pushing would take us to closer to a world of constant surveillance and endanger EU's strategic goal of digital sovereignty. Remember, EU has this goal of digital sovereignty. Of course, that means that they want to be in control of their own digital systems, and they're not if they are backdoors. And Element goes on to say, creating a backdoor for the good people to do good things will always shortly be exploited by bad people who do bad things. And I'll remind you that over the course of this last summer, and I think even in the spring and into the summer, maybe even last year, it was made known that Chinese hackers had basically infiltrated nearly any form of messaging done by U.S. telecom companies. AT&T, Verizon, T-Mobile, the three biggest ones, nobody was safe. They were in all of them. They were intercepting messages. How did they get in there? They got in there by the back doors that those telecoms were forced by law to put in to allow wiretapping to occur. Now, the problem is that it's one thing if the ability is there, the door is closed, and the warrant is the key to open it up. The problem is the hackers find a way to open up without the warrant, and we're perpetually in there. In these modern views that are being proposed, there is no warrant. It is a perpetual ability to be in that back door and be accessing things. And we're going to get into that as our we have a little bit of a discussion on filtered dragnets, which was an interesting concept out of the California law center. Element is calling on the European leaders to reject the current proposal and any other proposals which would force the implementation of client-side scanning, backdoors, or mass surveillance of private communications. And there is the inside of the open letter. They're discussing once again that the approach would not only make the internet less safe for everyone, but also undermine one of EU's most important strategic goals, progressing toward higher levels of digital sovereignty. Of course, the digital sovereignty, as we said, is that those individual countries have access to all of their data, and they're the ones that store it. Of course, this was something South Korea was trying to do until their data center burnt down. Whoops. But the reality is, and when you're talking about these digital sovereignty situations, they didn't do it right. They were mandating things be on their individual servers, and then they didn't have any redundancy built in. So redundancy is good, but and you can maintain digital sovereignty in that. They kind of talk about it. National security, they say encryption is essential for national security. This is true. Of course, one of the things we're seeing here is there's a lot of laws for thee and laws for me and not for thee. So, you know, big influential leaders or quote unquote powerful people are typically excluded from such things. But still at the same time, we want encryption to lock our accounts. We want encryption to secure our transactions, but we don't want encryption to make sure that we can always read every message that you're sending to somebody else. Even though it's pretty well known that the people that are going to do bad things are going to use other resources to get around the bad things. I mean, look at all this ID stuff, you know, the IDs going around. They're trying to verify everybody's ID. You know, Google's trying to do it. And now Blue Sky's checking your IDs in Ohio. And these are rolling out in many, many different places. And the problem is, well, the people up to bad stuff, well, they're just going to do it. People doing up to bad stuff too. Criminals going to criminal. Yo, they're just going to steal IDs and use those. So in which is awesome for them, actually, because it draws us more attention away from them than if there wasn't any such thing. Okay, they steal somebody's ID, and now it's just, oh, well, we know who that is. It's this ID. And so, you know, you're just sipping your latte at 7 in the morning, trying to get your kindergartner to actually put his shirt on right. And you got three other kids running through the house wild while you're yelling to eat their oatmeal. And before you know it, the FBI kicks in your door because some criminal did the criminal thing and stole your ID because it was forced to be uploaded to some stupid server. They stole it. They did criminal things utilizing your ID, and now the FBI is kicking in your door. Well, that's kind of stupid. And that's the type of stuff that always happens when you get into this. All right. So the legal text here would undermine European ethical and privacy first services by forcing them to weaken the very security guarantees that differentiates European businesses internationally. They mentioned that this contradicts the digital ambitions. The policies recognize encryption as essential to Europe's digital independence, and the CSA, this is a CSAM regulation, should not undermine these achievements by effectively mandating systemic vulnerabilities, which it does. And then they mention over here that the ones most at risk, just like the United States, are the small and medium-sized enterprises, the SMEs. So the SMEs do not have the financial and the technical resources to develop and maintain intrusive surveillance mechanisms, meaning compliance would impose prohibitive costs to force a market exit. So look at Blue Sky here in the States. They have simply walked away from Mississippi because the law in Mississippi is so overwhelmingly stupid that there's no way to not be caught up into it. Whereas Ohio, the law there is not as bad, and they can use the kiddo verification system, which is going to be the next big thing that we're going to start seeing breaches of. mark my words. And then they call on a number of different reasons that the element is calling on them. So reject the measures that would force the implementation of client-side scanning, backdoors, mass surveillance of private communications, such as we see currently in the Danish proposal for a council position for CSAM regulation. Protect encryption, preserve the trust that they have built internationally. Through encryption, by the way. Ensure the EU regulations strengthen rather than undermines the competitiveness of small businesses. And pursue child protection measures that are effective, proportionate, and compatible with Europe's strategic goals. How do you do that? Well, you simply use basic policing. And I wanted to talk about a couple different options here. One of those is how was Silk Road caught? So Silk Road, of course, whether you think it was really good or really bad, or whether you're independent, you know, if you're a pure libertarian, you thought the takedown of Silk Road was probably not good. If you're like, ooh, they were doing bad stuff, then you probably are pleased with the takedown of it. They could not find all these ways around it. Dragnets couldn't do it. They did good old-fashioned police work. The guy running it, the Dread Pirate Roberts, made a simple mistake, and then he intensified that mistake by using an accidentally leaked username as a username, asking on a technical help forum for something that was traced back to something needed for the store. They were able to trace that then back to an IP address, even though he was utilizing the Tor network. They were able to track this back to an IP address, which led to either a coffee shop or a library. So they simply staked out that place looking for who was there utilizing those services at the time. They got a warrant to watch that person more closely, and it turned out that they did some good old-fashioned police work to seize the computer before he was able to shut it down or log it out. And they did good old-fashioned police work, and I'm okay with good old-fashioned police work done in that manner. I have another case. I wasn't sure that I wanted to share this one or not, but I'm going to. This relates to this is a situation about one of the many children I've worked with over the years had a person close to them caught up in a CSAM sting. And again, it wasn't a dragnet that caused this. It was actually good old-fashioned police work, because that person was being a pervert and talking to other people on the internet. And one of those people ended up running away. And in part of the basic investigations, the parents said, here's all of her stuff. Do whatever you need to do to research it. And lo and behold, it turns out that they found all these chat logs, and one of them was this crazy perverted dude. So they just simply did the thing that police do, good police work, and they said, hey, this crazy perverted dude seemed to be doing crazy perverted things with this person we're investigating. Let's get a warrant for him because we have justable cause. They did such a warrant, executed it, and he ended up serving time in prison. And that was, again, good old-fashioned police work. You do not need a dragnet. Now, would a dragnet have caught this sooner? Maybe, maybe not. Because one of the things we're seeing right now is how many false positives. In fact, just this week, there were a lot of people's Google accounts had been canceled because they were utilizing an app, which I think actually originated from Google. One of the AI apps that come out recently, and there was a hashtag trend going around, which was a picture with your younger self. And the idea is you would take a picture of you now and a picture of you as a child, and you would have the AI show you as hugging each other. And Google, despite this trend being used, I think it was by Google services, Google started flagging all these things as potential CSAM. And the problem is if Google flags your account as potential CSAM, even if you are cleared after an investigation, Google doesn't give you your account back. So we see these dragnets are leading to a whole ton of false positives, which then leads to giant dragging people through the mud all over AI systems. And that's unfortunately the consequence of a dragnet. But I want to move over here into United States, because there's two fairly competing views here. And I want to talk about this. And this is where if you're like sitting on one side or the other really strongly about this issue, please just hear me out for a brief moment. Because you have these ICE raids going on where they're arresting people who are committing legitimate crimes. And we're not just talking, the crime of coming into the country illegally, which is a crime and you should get deported. But they are prioritizing people who also have done other forms of violent crimes. All right. And what you have is a situation where this has to be done the way it's being done, because so many people were let in without being vetted and actual crime was breaking out all across the country. And so we have this situation with ICE. All right. Now, all that being said, it would have been way better if people just, you know, prosecuted criminals the first time. And when in the course of the prosecution said, huh, you're actually not here legally, and simply handed them over, or at least at the very least didn't stop ICE from finding the people. All right. Now, that is a system that is functional in is what? Standard policing, right? Somebody does a crime, the police investigate, they find somebody, and then they go, oh, wow, look at this. We actually happen to have a person here who's not here legally, who's committing other crimes. If we hand them over, it solves the problem. But we're seeing a situation where people are committing, whether they're here legally or not, committing crimes. The police are doing their job. They're taking them into the courts, and the courts are simply letting them out on the streets. And that leads to more crime and things like that. Well, if they had done the right thing first, we wouldn't have to have this giant response. And so what does ICE do in this giant response? Well, now they want to turn to big tech. And this is where I disagree with them. I do not want ICE running stingrays. I do not want ICE running flock cameras. I do not want ICE doing any form of that stuff. I want ICE to cooperate with local police. When local police find somebody who needs to be deported, they should be like, hey, ICE, we got a guy, come get him. Excellent. That would be police. But now, since there's so much pushback against ICE, ICE feels they have to do the only thing they can do, which is deep state surveillance, which is a problem. Once again, are you seeing these V for Vendetta vibes show up? You know, what are they going to do? The only thing they know how to do. And what are they going to do? They're going to fight back, you know. And this is the thing that's going to happen. This is a problem caused by policies that will not treat criminals the way criminals need to be treated. Okay, so ICE buys a bunch of vehicles equipped with fake cell towers to spy on phones. So they're bringing these giant vehicles in. This is an $825,000 contract, by the way. So the vehicles are being equipped with Stingrays. And the company here is TOSV, Tech Ops Specialty Vehicles, which is based in Maryland, curiously close to D.C. Funny. So TOSV also signed a similar contract with ICE in September, which, by the way, is before Orange Man Bad. This is not a Trump situation, folks. This is a Biden situation, too. Both parties, the Democrats and the Republicans, are both complicit in deep state surveillance. And I'm not agreeing to any of it. All right. So we do not. Well, that's just a quote from the company. Who cares? They're basically saying, yeah, we don't make this stuff. We just equip the vehicles with it. So what happened here is that ICE was using the cell site simulators to track down the persons who was originally part of a criminal gang in the United States who had been ordered to leave the country in 2023. So you see here that they had to use a cell phone tracker. They had to use a Stingray to find a person who was supposed to be out of the country a long time ago. Why? Because he had already been convicted of criminal activity. You see, if our state was working properly and the criminal did the criminal activity and they found out they was not actually under the right jurisdiction and hand him over to be deported, it wouldn't be a problem and they would not feel the need to run these cell site simulators. But unfortunately, I feel the need to run the cell site simulators because there's so many people that are completely unhinged and apparently want criminals running through our streets that they are blocking the law enforcement from actually doing their job. And that is a bit of a problem. And so I do not want ICE to have the stingrays. All right. But they are, because other means of utilizing these services are not being effective. In other words, they're getting blocked at every turn, so they are turning to the only way they know to keep tabs on the people. They have to turn to the deep state because people do not want them to actually be doing their job. Now, while I do not want these to happen, I would kind of like to have these ICE tracking agents apps up here. However, with a caveat. And let me explain my caveat. Again, if there is a bunch of unhinged lunatics interfering with police work, this is a bad thing. And if people are using these to rally giant groups and provoke ICE agents from doing their job, that is a problem. But the mere fact we have an app which tells you where they happen to be at is not necessarily a problem. And for this, I cite the fact that we oftentimes use these apps on our phones for driving, and people will often go in there and report where police happen to be at. Well, it's not really a problem if I'm driving down the road and I get beep, 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 alert, there's a police officer coming up. If a bunch of people are coming in there seeing that and all swarming the police and starting to do violent things to the police, and the police have to act in the way police act, I'm sorry, that's just FAFO. But if people see that and go, oh, there's a police ahead, I should slow down and make sure I'm obeying the posted speed limits, it's been useful information, that's fine. The tech is used to help the citizens, which is exactly the way tech should go. These people are our civil servants, not our masters, okay? It is us who need to have the technological advance over the police state, okay? It needs to be a citizen state. Why? For the purpose not of swarming the officer and impeding his job, but so that you can obey the law. I'm okay with that. And if people are using these, so some illegal immigrant has this device on his phone, go, oh, there's ICE agents that way, I'm going to go this way instead, I'm okay with that. But to say we're going to have these apps so that people can swarm them and interfere with our work and call them all sorts of, mid-1940s German soldier names, I'm not okay with that. So I do not want this app to be taken off the App Store, but I don't want people to use this app as a means to harass the agents from doing their jobs. If they are using this app to become a better law-abiding citizen, that is a perfectly fine thing. All right. So that's kind of where my take is on this. But this kind of got into a little bit more of some deeper discussions with things. And so I wanted to have a look at a couple of things here. From Hartman Law, the pros and the cons of government surveillance programs. Because this is really the thing. And the challenge is that at least in the United States, I'm a United States citizen. I'm not speaking to how the law is supposed to work in other countries. I know UK is a monarchy and EU, I don't know what it is. And you get all sorts of different circumstances. I am speaking here from a person in the United States applying to United States law. And in United States law, the government is done at the consent of the people. In other words, the people are the masters of the government, not the government the masters of the people. The government are the civil servants to keep the order in the society and to assist the citizens in the society, not taskmasters over the society. And that is where the philosophy has flipped. And ultimately, if we had the gonads in this country, we might actually vote people out of office who abuse the power and think that they are the masters, humble them by getting them out of office and elect people in who are not. Unfortunately, the challenge is that more often than not, it's only sociopaths who run for office. So good luck with that. We are technically a country run by a bunch of psychos. So anyway, the psychos get together and they want to engage in government surveillance because government surveillance is the only way to catch all them bad guys, all them juicy, saucy bad guys. Government surveillance programs have been a topic of intense debate over many years, particularly in the wake of advancements in technology that have dramatically increased the capabilities of such programs. How wonderful. So the balance between ensuring safety and preserving individual freedoms is a delicate one, and these programs continue to evolve and do so to the arguments to and against them. All right, so ultimately, the thing is that we cannot have, in a world of privacy, we cannot have ultimate security. In a world of security, we cannot have any privacy. And this is that balance. In fact, I think it was Benjamin Franklin, I think, is quoted as saying, "He who wants to trade privacy for security deserves neither." And this is the thing we have to get to. We have to recognize that we are supposed to be the ones responsible for ourselves, for our families. Let us have the ability to protect ourselves, i.e. that's why we have a Second Amendment in the United States. And in the course of all of that, let's go ahead and have the ability to defend ourselves and to take care of ourselves and protect ourselves. And let's turn to the government to enforce that on people that are attempting to overrun our rights. And that really is the way it's supposed to be done. The challenge is that the government wants to say, well, no. We want to be the ones monitoring all of society to make sure that nobody's breaking the rules to begin with. And that's not the the spirit of American law. American law is not a system which is always looking for who's doing wrong. We all have a presumption of being innocent until proven guilty. And so any form of surveilling somebody, assuming they might be doing wrong, is inherently fundamentally un-American and needs to be cast off. We need to have that privacy. It's only when a crime is committed or attempted to be committed is when the law enforcement steps up and does their job. The problem is, going back to our earlier discussion, when these types of things happen, we have to have a situation where the actual ruling authorities, I shouldn't say ruling authorities, the government officials have to follow the sentencing structures set up to keep those criminals out of society. And for Lord's sake, if somebody is not competent to stand trial for murdering somebody, they do not need to be walking the streets. They need to be in an institution. Whether that is jail or a mental institution is a completely different question. But that's kind of what we're arguing, because we're seeing in our modern iteration of law, people actually committing horribly violent crimes, but they're saying, we're just not mentally capable of standing trial. Okay, let them back on the streets. Well, that makes about as much sense as, I don't know, a beanbag in the ocean or something. Who knows? You know, I'm just making up two random words now. The justification for government surveillance, one of the primary justifications, is the need to protect national security. The ability to monitor communications, track movements, and gather data on individuals and organizations suspected of posing a threat is viewed as a critical tool in the fight against terrorism and other forms of crime. This is where portions of the Patriot Act and the PRISM programs had a good spirit behind them. Hey, we're not surveilling Americans. We're just surveilling international people. The problem is sometimes international people talk to American people. And I think once an American gets on the line, I think that completely that poisons the well of any data. That should be the case. Let's track that guy's other conversations as well. But that's really the thing is, if you're going to monitor conversations outside the country, I guess have at it. Unfortunately, we have the Five Eyes. We can't surveil our own citizens, but UK can surveil our citizens. We can surveil the UK citizens, and then the two governments can share notes on each other. Yeah, that should be against the law as well, but oh well. So the ability to monitor communications, track movements, and gather data on individuals and organizations suspected of posing a threat is viewed as a critical tool in the fight against terrorism and other forms of crime. They also note that surveillance programs deter criminal activity, which is partially true. And government surveillance programs can also contribute to public safety by helping to identify and respond to emergencies. The problem is there's so much information being tracked, it becomes useless to helping to do any of that. And so some people recognize that. Now, there are concerns surrounding surveillance programs. One of the most prominent criticisms is they can lead to the erosion of individual freedoms and the widespread collection and storage of personal data, often without the knowledge or consent of the individuals resolved, raise serious questions about the right to privacy. And this is true because in the United States, we have a constitution. In the constitution, we have the Fourth Amendment. Fourth Amendment says the right of the people to be secure in their persons, houses, papers, and effects against unreasonable searches and seizures shall not be violated, and no warrants shall issue but upon probable cause supported by an oath or affirmation and particularly describing the place to be searched and the persons or things to be seized. Which pretty much means every form of digital surveillance that is not without the direct consent is a violation. However, we also have all of these stupid privacy policies tied to all these stupid apps that basically sign away the Fourth Amendment for you if you use the app. And then it just depends on, do they have a chummy relationship with the United States government or not? Because if you've already given it to the company to do, well, you've just excluded yourself from this. And that's why I recommend people do not use any apps or services that you do not fully understand or do not fully need. But the fact of the matter is that if a government should not have the ability to do a gag warrant, nor should a government have the ability to do any form of data surveillance, whether directly or indirectly through a third party contractor, a third party service, a third party company. They should not be able to do any of that kind of stuff. But unfortunately, this Fourth Amendment is being violated a lot. But we're going to get into some mentally deranged people who want to see the Fourth Amendment evolve. Yes, the evolution of the amendment, folks. Who would have thunk it? First peppered moths, now the Constitution. Evolution is a thing, right? So they say down here, this can have a chilling effect on free speech and other fundamental rights, which is true, because the daily surveillance inadvertently leads to being silenced for your political speech. And that's really the purpose of the First Amendment. Government surveillance programs are often shrouded in secrecy with little accountability or oversight, and the transparency can create opportunities for misuse, whether by individuals within the government or the institutions themselves, and that the surveillance tools go beyond the stated objectives, such as targeting political opponents or to engage in discriminatory practices. And we do see this a lot. There is a person of the Biden administration prosecuted for a spicy meme against Hillary Clinton, although people were doing the exact same thing against Donald Trump, and nobody seemed to do anything about that. Again, it was a particular political opponent that was targeted, not the people on their side. So in many cases, the sheer volume of data collected can be overwhelming, making it difficult for authorities to identify genuine threats. This is true. I was trying to find the data that backed this up because I've seen it quoted several times, but it seems to be scrubbed from the internet. But there was apparently some data somewhere showing that not a single criminal had been apprehended because of the Patriot Act downstream effects. And I was not able to find any information on that one way or the other. They do mention down here under the legal and ethical implications of the government surveillance programs. In democratic societies, the government is supposed to serve the people and protect their rights. However, when surveillance programs are implemented without the knowledge or consent of the public, it can create a sense of betrayal. That is true. So how do we balance security and privacy in the age of surveillance? Governments should ensure that their surveillance programs are in line with international human rights standards and that individuals have the ability to challenge surveillance practices in court. Unfortunately, if the police have a warrant to search your house, you know it. But if they have a warrant to search your Microsoft account or your Google account, they often issue those warrants with a gag, and so you do not know that your data is being accessed or harvested. And that in and of itself is a fundamental problem that needs to change. And then we got into this interesting discussion. I wanted to look into this. This is a really long article, and it is a really fascinating read. And I'll just remind you here, the links to our show are in the description of the video, whether you're watching the edited version or the full live stream. I would encourage you to read this. This is from the Southern California Law Review. And what they're basically trying to make the argument here is that the Fourth Amendment has to evolve to allow what's called filtered dragnets, which is all just couched in cozy language to basically say, yeah, we should be able to constantly surveil people, but only alert the government when the surveillance shows you're up to naughty things. Like, you know, Google flagging a picture of you hugging a younger version of you. You know, or the case, it's really hilarious because in the New Digital Age book by Eric Schmidt, the former CEO of Google, when he was CEO, he wrote this book with another person. One of the things they argued in that book is this stuff is so good, it's going to produce so much tele-advances. We're just going to be able to get on the conference call with our doctor and not go into the hospital, all this kind of stuff. Well, wouldn't you know it, under COVID, this exact thing happened. And who is it that flagged a potential abuse? It was Google itself. So Google's like, look at this amazing stuff we can do. Telehealth for all, reducing the costs in healthcare and digital age is ushering in amazing things. Hey, pedo, go to jail, you know, because a man during COVID, when all these hospitals were down, everyone's doing all this extra stuff, he calls his doctor, says, hey, my toddler son has a weird rash down in his groin region. And the doctor tells him, take a picture of it, send it to me. So the guy takes a picture with his Android phone, sends it to the doctor. And the doctor says, oh, I know exactly what that is. Over-the-counter medication's all you need. Here's the prescription. I'll write it. Go pick it up. No big deal. Rash went away. And within a couple of days, Google flags the account for CSAM. They send the police and child services. The couple simply shows the phone records and the medical things to the doctor's office. The doctor says, yeah, that's exactly what I told him to do. Yep, this is the same picture. Oh, that's the only picture. Yeah, no problem here. Police, like, it was the fastest CPS investigation in the history of America. And yet Google still locked the account, would not give the guy his data back. So isn't it so interesting that the CEO of Google is telling us about all of these amazing things? However, their system brings up all these false positives, alerts it to the police, and that is exactly the filter dragnet that these guys over here are actually arguing for. But they're from California, so something's not right in their head. So I kid only partially. I mean, look at your forerunner for governor right now, folks. Talk about a loony bin. Filter dragnets are digital searchers that identify a suspect based on details of a crime. They can be designed to withhold information from law enforcement until there's a very high probability that an individual has committed the offense, like, you know, you hugging a younger version of you through an app that Google recommended. Go figure. DNA matching, facial recognition, photographs, video, automated CSAM detection, and reverse geolocation, geofence warrants. You know, that thing I always warn you about. You know, you're taking your morning jog next to your bank because it's just the best route to your, around your house, and the bank's robbed one morning. You're caught up in a geo warrant, and they want to know why you're casing the bank every other day. And, you know, you're the criminal because the criminal was smart and left his phone at home, but you're running with your phone on. And so, you know, you're the criminal, and now you have to prove you're innocent rather than them proving you're guilty, all based on this fabrication called the geofence warrant, because they think you're casing the bank on your morning jog. That type of stuff has happened as well. All right. Filter dragnets imperil society precisely because they detect crime too well. Sudden increases of detection of criminal conduct will intensify the pathologies of American criminal justice. Namely, too many marginally harmful acts are criminalized, crimes are punished too harshly, and police and prosecutors have too much discretion. And it's that prosecutors having too much discretion part that I have the biggest problem with. Because by and large, when crime happens in big cities, the police are doing a really good job bringing them to the criminal justice system. Criminal justice system says, yeah, just let them out. I mean, go watch Code Blue Cam. How many of those guys get off on signature warnings after driving through town like four different counties at 100 mile an hour high-speed chase? They crashed six vehicles along the way, damaged all the police resources. All these guys are caught up, and they get off with a signature warrant. Like, yep, he was booked on, 17 accounts of felony evading law enforcement and reckless endangerment and blah, blah, blah. And you get to the end of the video and the guy's let off on a signature bond and all of his charges were read in but written out. And then he gets off like a misdemeanor and $1,000 fine. If you think I'm kidding, go watch Code Blue Cam, the YouTube channel, because you will see time after time after time after time. The police are doing a tremendous job, and the district attorneys are like, no crime here, and letting them all go. And if they just kept those people in prison, it's like the statistics from a few years ago in New York City. It was like 7,000 arrests for shoplifting were done by, it was like 250 people. You know, if you put the first 250 people in jail, you would have only had 250 shoplifting events. Isn't that interesting? But the problem is here is that they're giving too much discretion, and that really is part of the problem. So, by way of introduction, when aimed at a person, would detect instantaneously whether the person. Okay, so they're talking about a theoretical thing here, and they were talking about the approval of drug sniffing dogs 40 years ago, and they said, imagine a device. You point the device at somebody, it can tell you instantaneously if a person is carrying an illegal substance, and that's kind of the way that they were pitching these drug sniffing dogs. They could, you know, of course, the owners, of course, it's so nebulous, you got to be trained in how to read the dog. And so, you know, if you refuse to let your car be searched, they just bring over a drug sniffing dog, and the drug sniffing dog, like, you know, smells a cat that you drove by a little while ago, and then the dog hit, and then they tear apart your vehicle, and then they find nothing, go, oh, sorry, our mistake, and then you have absolutely no recourse, which is actually why the state of Utah has actually banned drug sniffing dogs as a means of searching vehicles. It's kind of interesting on that basis. But they said, if such a device could protect the presence, could detect the presence of an illegal substance with perfect accuracy, there would be no constitutional obstacle to police cruising through the residential neighborhood and using the device to identify all homes in which the drug is present. So is it a constitutional thing for the police to meander around? And I guess that was the hint of the argument. But if you look again at this Fourth Amendment, what you see here is that people, the right of people have to be secure in their persons, houses, papers, and effects against unreasonable searches and seizures. So if you have this device that can instantaneously detect everything, I argue, and I think half of that court was arguing, that running around pointing this at every house is akin to an illegal search. And that was really what was going on in the discussion here. But what this leads into now is this concept of these modern day filtered dragnets, where the tech surveillance companies are monitoring everything we do and then handing the data over, like Google, you know, hugging the younger version of you. And they hand this data over all on this basis. They say law enforcement will use particulars of a crime, such as a fingerprint, to speak and determine who they are. But filtered dragnets force investigations based on the evidence of a crime. Computers will automatically scan through data without exposing it and will make disclosure only when there is probable cause to believe that a person's data matches the signature of a crime. The problem is that is a violation of the Fourth Amendment, because you are effectively searching a person without a just cause. And that's why I argue that filtered dragnets are themselves a violation. They argue that the technologies meet the benchmarks when they are basically becoming this device that can detect with near certainty about it. So what they're trying to argue now is that in this surveillance state, people wanting to mount a Fourth Amendment defense will require a litigant to convincingly argue that even though the defendant is very likely to have committed a crime, even though the police did not see or have discretionary access to data for any other persons, they did not have irrelevant data about the defendant, the search was nevertheless unreasonable. And I argue anytime you're pointing the device that can detect with perfect accuracy at a person without just cause of pointing it at that person, you are violating the Fourth Amendment. And that's exactly what's going on with these filter dragnets. So what happens to the Fourth Amendment theory of a practice of a crime of criminal justice is nearly every crime could be detected. So this goes back to the 1990s. Larry Lessig asked the very question. He anticipated a digital technologies may create a wedge between privacy and anti-authoritarian rationales for criminal procedure. But in most Fourth Amendment scholars do not even recognize the schism between privacy and anti-authoritarianism goals. They continue to focus on privacy as the key constraint on any police activity. The scholars who have recognized liberty and anti-authoritarianism as Fourth Amendment lodestars have insisted that all technology-assisted surveillance is a tool of abuse of state power per se. And I would argue that, but look at even the fact they're using this anti-authoritarian type stuff in here, they are literally creating a euphemism to make it sound like their government is not authoritarian. They are literally utilizing this word and meaning the antithesis, and it is kind of frightening. They say it is the wrong course to lump all these together, because the threat from filtered dragnets is tyranny, and the Fourth Amendment will be more effective and coherent if we recognize that fact. So basically they're saying that, yes, filtered dragnets are indeed tyranny, but that's okay because they do not violate our privacy. They're only triggering when thresholds of a crime have been met, because, you know, you've been searched without a just cause or a warrant, which is a mere violation of our Constitution. So when the state has also unchecked power to choose where and when to investigate within the ocean of criminal but typically ignored conduct, the populace is at the mercy of the state's will. And this is the type of stuff we see all the time right now. They want to completely throw Perry in jail for stopping a criminal act, but they do not want to jail the man who stabs a woman on a plane because she happens to be white. That is a serious problem. This is insane. It is insane how much discretion they actually have. If there is sufficient evidence of a crime, we have to have mandated minimum sentences, which, by the way, there are mandatory minimum sentences. They're just not being followed, which is why we had a guy who killed a child by stabbing him several times in the head. And this week he was let off after only 8 years in jail. Why? Well, he was competent to break into the house, but he was not competent to stab the child. Go figure that one out. You know, you're competent to commit your first felony. You're not competent to convict the second felony. But we just don't want to keep him in jail forever. I mean, he might be reformed. You never know. You know, it's only the second person he stabbed. The first one under 10, you know. So the article proposes a new grand bargain for the Fourth Amendment law. The Supreme Court should recognize filtered dragnets as legitimate and even desirable tools for criminal investigations, but constitutional rules should guarantee the substance of American criminal law will be limited to conduct that is commonly recognized as heinous, and the severity of the punishment fits the reprehensibility of a crime, and that enforcement of criminal law is equally non-binary. So basically, if you do certain things, and probably if you do certain things and under of a certain persuasion, where's the client list, folks? I mean, just think about it, right? Clearly, we have not reached that threshold in that person's case. It's too inconvenient, you know. But they kind of go on. So you talk first, what is a filtered dragnet? The filtered dragnet is the types of things that we are looking for, matching unique criminal details. So they're looking for meta details. Are you constantly contacting somebody that is, you know, on some terror watch list? They actually talk about their DNA matching. Of course, this one was used to catch the Golden State Killer a couple years ago based on, I think it was 23andMe's data. You have facial recognition technology, routinely bad. You have automated CSAM detection. False positives are very possible and ruins people's lives when that occurs. We have geofences and other reverse searches. In some places, these are unconstitutional already. There's still a debate about these, but those are filtered dragnets. Scanner, sensors, cameras, and microphones, filter dragnets. You're looking for keywords. You're looking for key purchases. You know, don't order nails in the same order you order a pressure cooker. That will put you on a list. So the advantage of filtered dragnets, of course, is that it's perpetually watching, and that's why I think it's a violation of the Fourth Amendment. Article will eventually explain why they impose serious risks that are not adequately address in the Fourth Amendment theory, but we'll first explore the reasons to embrace rather than resist them. So decrease exposure of innocent irrelevant details. So what this basically means, the section talks about the since the police do not have access to anything until the threshold of alleged data is met, the police don't have anything. They think that this achieves the law. And I disagree, but that's kind of what the argument is. Increase accuracy, you know, watching for these criminal things go on. Increase detection and deterrence. Of course, if we're all perpetually spied on, you know, we'll do less bad stuff allegedly. And so we see a lot of these different circumstances. Now, what about the privacy element? Most courts, scholars, and civil society organizations have considered the societal impact of filter dragnets such as geofencing, reverse keyword searches, and have concluded they pose serious threats to privacy. So putting aside for a moment whether filter dragnets are consistent with the full set of Fourth Amendment principles, this part of the argument that filter dragnets pose almost no threat to Fourth Amendment privacy. They're basically saying, hey, since it's not the police looking, it's okay. It's just the company that's snitching. You just can't get away from the company. But I think that anybody acting on behalf of the government is the government itself and therefore is a violation of the Fourth Amendment. This does not mean filter dragnets are harmful or harmless. To the contrary, Part 5 will depose the arguments that pose dangers to it. They're kind of talking about judicial reactions and things like that. You know, some of those have been found unlawful. Under the dragnets and tyranny, filter dragnets provide high concentrated dose of criminal detection, which, of course, false positives is another way to read that. And they say down here, which is interesting, even though in theory, the whole point of having law enforcement is to detect and prosecute crime, these people immediately need to be discredited on that basis, because the basis of the judicial system in the United States is not crime detection. It is crime investigation. The police are not in this country to be running around looking for crimes before they happen. This is not Minority Report. We do not have a group of precogs. We're not kicking in doors prior to somebody kicking in a crime. There is no crime yet committed. Therefore, detection of crime is not the purview. The purview is to investigate crime and attempted crime and to prosecute crime. And that is a fundamental difference between detection and prosecution. But you can see what these shifty, tricky lawyers are doing here is they're trying to say, well, if we're talking about detecting crime, filter dragnets are the best way to go. So even the argument arguing that dragnets are tyranny, they're still arguing that the dragnets are the way to go. And so looking through further, let me see if I had another section down here. Yeah. So under the anti-authoritarianism Fourth Amendment, the anti-authoritarianism rather than privacy should be the benchmark for the Fourth Amendment. So the way they're defining anti-authoritarianism is that the government's not the one conducting these searches. It's just private companies, and the private companies are stitching on the government. Therefore, the government is not the authoritarian. It's anti-authoritarian. The government's not doing it all. It's just other companies on behalf of the government is doing it, which in and of itself is a violation of the Fourth Amendment. Because it doesn't matter who's doing the search. If the government is ultimately the recipient of that source, well, that is the fundamental problem. And so they say the current trajectory of Fourth Amendment case law, that we are headed for one of two substantial endpoints. Either the state will be able to use the filter dragnets with little to protect its citizens from the perils of broad criminal laws, harsh criminal sentences, and selective enforcement, or the state will have to effectively be prohibited from using filter dragnets, leaving the criminal justice system status quo that nobody would devise and few would defend. Yeah, regular policing is what does best, and we need to do that. So this is the statement here I want to look at the end here. Thus, the Fourth Amendment must evolve to demand reasonableness when detection is easy. Oh, so the Fourth Amendment must evolve now. I don't think we need evolution at all. We need the right of the people to be secure in their persons, houses, papers, and effects against an unreasonable search and seizure. This includes anybody who's going to hand that data over to a government. So unless you have a just cause for searching for illegal material, you best assume that those people are not committing crime, because in this country of America, we are innocent until proven guilty, and you do not have the right to scour over my shoulder waiting for me to, quote unquote, do something allegedly wrong. This is a total sham. These people here are psychopaths, but we probably guess that from their place of origin. So there is our fairly long, I did not expect a 50-minute discussion on combating the police state, but hopefully it was beneficial and useful information as we dig into the surveillance states and things like this. Ultimately, we need to have ultimate privacy, at least where American law is concerned, because American law is based on everybody is innocent until proven guilty, and we all have the right to privacy from government intrusion until there is such just cause that necessitates the government specifically looking at us. And that is the place where we are not seeing in our current state. So let me know your thoughts to that in the comments. The link to the entire stream is down below if you want to see the rest of this.